Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. May 9th is one of the most important dates on the calendar for Russians. It was on this day in 1945 fascism in Europe was crushed. Celebrating the end of this war is no longer a high priority in the West. In fact, there has been a long ongoing attempt to understate the role the Soviet Union played in defeating Nazi Germany. Crosstalking Victory Day, I'm joined by my guest, Vladimir Goldstein in Providence. He is the chair of the Department of Slavic Studies at Brown University. In Virginia, we have James Shatris. He is a former U.S. diplomat and a former advisor to U.S. Senate Republican leadership. And in Basel, we have Andrei Teloshenko. He is a former Ukrainian diplomat. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Vladimir, let me go to you first, because, you know, you were born in the Soviet Union. You immigrated to the United States, but the calendar is the same in both countries, essentially. In the West, they celebrate the end of the war on May 8th. They celebrate it on the 9th here in Russia, just because of the signing of it. It ended up being the next day for the Russians, so there was no other reason than that. But before the recording, I told you how the city is all dressed up, and there's a lot of anticipation. There's going to be parades. There's going to be all kinds of things for young people and children. I mean, it's really, truly spectacular what you see, and it's repeated all across the country. I well imagine, my friend, where you live, that's not the case.
It's absolutely not. And I, you know, by good sort of Soviet Russian tradition, like to get together with my friends on the 9th and recollect all our relatives who suffered. And when I invite my friends, non-Russians, they say, why? What's the big deal? Well, what is, I said, well, Victory Day. What Victory Day? Day of whom? So basically, even educated people whom I kind of, you know, associate with, for them, it's not a big deal. And from what I understand, it was becoming less and less of a big deal with time. That, you know, right after this generation which survived the war, they remembered both hardship and unbelievable Soviet-Russian contribution. But as time went on, the whole thing was kind of replaced by Hollywoodization of history. Yep. And basically, there was one big event in 43 when Americans invaded Normandy. And that was about it. So that's kind of the reality, that myth and Hollywood slowly replaces it, and concrete memory and concrete celebration, concrete commemoration is kind of disappears.
Yeah, well, you know, Jim, obviously we've had the Hollywoodization of the conflict, Saving Private Ryan and things like that, which is all right. Okay, that's fine. But I mean, Vladimir's right, but it's worse because there's an intentional downplaying of the Soviet contribution. I mean, the president of the United States just said a few days ago it was the United States that primarily won the First and Second World War. Well, you know, that's very Trumpian in his mind. It's not the first time he gets history wrong. As a matter of fact, he gets it wrong almost all the time, and that's very painful for where I live, because there is no family in this country, in the Russian Federation, that doesn't have a relative that passed, died, or was in captivity during that conflict. It is a very, very important unifying cultural, societal issue, but it is being dismissed in the West. They just don't want to admit that the Soviet Union played a positive role, because they equate the Soviet Union with Russia. And obviously, we have the context of the Ukraine conflict today. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, Peter, I think you're right. It is deliberate. I mean, I can't help but think back in the old days in the Soviet Union, when a political figure was disgraced, they would airbrush him out of the pictures or out of the movies. They said a Soviet historian was someone who could accurately predict the past. That's sort of where we are now, where the political needs of the present mean revising history to make it fit. And I think that's what our political leaders do, is that, you know, because in the post-Cold War, now the post-Cold War era, we have to justify this American hegemony. That means we did everything that was ever good in history. You mentioned not only World War II, but World War I. Frankly, our entry into that war probably prolonged that war and prevented the negotiated peace that might have ended it earlier and saved millions of lives. Well, World War II, we've got to revise that one too, and even revise the history of the Cold War and how the Cold War ended too, coming from the Western leaders to the Soviet and later the Russian leadership, which have helped bring us to the conflict we have today.
You know, it's really interesting because what we do is we just have rewriting of history over and over again. There's so many rewrites right now, it's hard to keep track of them. Andrei, you're a Ukrainian, and only up until recently, Ukraine celebrated very much like their Russians colleagues, their Kazakh colleagues, and et cetera, in the former Soviet Union. It was the entire former Soviet Union has the ability or the interest in doing it, they will do it. But, I mean, as a Ukrainian, how do you feel about it? Because Ukraine was part of the great victory in 1945 as well.
Yes, and I want to congratulate everybody on this victory day, because this is a great victory for not just Soviet Union, not just Russia and Ukraine, but this is a victory for the whole free world, which the Soviet army and the Russian army brought by cleaning out the cleansing of fascism, Nazism in Europe. So congratulations to everybody. My two great-grandfathers fought one in the Ukrainian front, first Ukrainian front, and one in the second Ukrainian front. One got to Prague and got hit with an artillery shell there. He stayed alive, but he still went through this war, and he told me about this. So this is a great day for everybody who does celebrate the good against evil in this world. And the destruction of this celebration by the West today, the political destruction, trying to bring an enemy in this, trying to rewrite history in this, is a total disgrace for me as a Ukrainian. And for me, the Ukrainian, it's a total disgrace that today's the Kyiv regime, which is basically undermining the support of the Nazism and the facilitating the support of Nazism in Ukraine with Bandera, with all the Nazi heroes, and heroifying them with the naming of the streets and banning the celebration of the Victory Day, the May 9th, is just a disgrace. And I don't want my country to be this way. And that's why I didn't want to support this regime in Ukraine today. And I understood that this is the wrong way to go in history, the wrong path they're leading my country to, because they're destroying our history, the history where everybody was brought together in victory. And that's why the West wants to do this. They want to undermine and rewrite that our Ukrainians were part of the victory. Because
yes,
if we take away this victory, it's a symbolism inside us, they're going to basically destroy us as a people. That's what they're doing. That's what they did with destroying Ukraine. They destroy Ukraine as the people were taking away the victory they gained by losing millions of lives in the Second World War, or the Velika Otechesna Vojna, how they call it in our country.
Yeah, you know, and Vladimir, also is something I'm sure you probably noticed, is that even when I lived back in the United States in the late 1990s, the New York Review of Books started this debate, a completely ridiculous one, but they did nonetheless, that both the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany are responsible for the Second World War in Europe. And that mantra is only continued to this day. I mean, and this is making it into the, you know, the halls of academia, that, you know, there is equal culpability. Go ahead, Vladimir. Of course, this is the false history. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's in connection with what we've already discussed. Once the United States decide to assert its hegemony in ideological and in all other spheres, so they are victors and they are the good guys. And who are the bad guys? All the rest. So, you know, Germany is bad, Russia is bad, Stalin is bad, Hitler is bad. So then it sort of was like a matter of technique and a certain, you know, kind of unscrupulous historians who began to push this kind of narrative that the whole war was precipitated by Hitler, you know, Stalin, or Ribbentrop, Molotov, you know, pact, and so on and so forth. So ultimately, what lies behind it is a very kind of unpleasant project, which is not new for the West, is of demonization of Russia, refusal to understand the country, its concerns, its history. So it's sort of, rather than kind of viewing long 20th century as Russia going through revolution, solutions. Russians wanted to find their way. Russians confronting this juggernaut of Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany trying to kind of catch up with England and France and America and pushing for Lebensraum, as they said. They were moving to the way, to Russia to grab Russian resources, Russian turn Russian people into slaves. So to recognize it, to acknowledge it, to recognize that Russia is a was an ally of U.S. and was kind of a legitimate, you know, kind of ally, a legitimate partner of the whole thing. Nobody wants to do that. Only America matters. And consequently, Russia began to be pushed first into kind of, you know, the crazy communist country, then sort of almost like equivalent of Hitler. And this is kind of very unscrupulous. And that's kind of view started with some kind of maniacs in academia, but now it's probably politicians embraced it. School textbooks embrace it, and that's what school children learn.
Yeah, but Jim, but if denying Russia's role in the defeat of fascism in Europe undermines or actually gives props to the losing side, I mean, because it's assuming that what Russia did was wrong, which is absurd, because it was, as Vladimir pointed out, it was a collective thing. They were allies. They were allies in the Soviet Union. So they're undermining the true ugliness of fascism in Europe.
Well, I think the Western allies even then were somewhat reluctant allies of the Soviet Union, as Vladimir pointed out. You know, we've seen this, you know, this drive to the east from the west on many, many occasions long before the Soviet Union came into existence, and really now continuing after the Soviet Union ceased to exist because of the reasons he suggests, that the West wants one way or the other, by hook or by crook, to seize those resources. Hey, for that matter, what's different about that and what Trump is touting as a big mineral deal? We're going to get our mitts on whatever resources happen to lie in Ukraine, or whatever part of Ukraine remains under Kiev regime.
I agree, and then we're going to continue with this line of thought. Gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on victory in Europe 80 years on. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Victory Day. Okay, let's go back to Andre. Andre, Jim brought up a really, really interesting point in the first part of the program, and I'd like to expand upon it. Unfortunately, as it's already been mentioned, and we have this Hollywoodization of the Second World War, unfortunately, Nazis are made kind of cool, which I find very quite odious. But, you know, people like the uniforms and the regalia and stuff like that. But historically speaking, there is a lack of understanding on how Russia seizes it. And Jim brought it up. I mean, we had Napoleon and his coalition of countries invaded Russia. We had Hitler and his coalition. And now we have a Western coalition that is actually larger than what Nazi Germany had, because it didn't have the United States involved in it. So from the Russian perspective, we have centuries of the West invading Russia. And no wonder when the last time it was attempted, it was absolutely crushed in the streets of Berlin, that it be remembered. But there's no Western perspective of how Russia sees the threats coming from the West to this day. Andre.
Yeah. Today we see how the continuation, again, to destroy, try to destroy Russia, take its resources, is continuing from the West. And it's happened throughout hundreds of years prior to this, and it's not stopping. And today, the West has joined with the United States. The United States, why has it joined? Because after the World War II, what it got, and what got the former Banderas, the former Nazi SS officers to work for the CIA, to work for NATO, they were the ones who the U.S. brought them and gave them amnesty to come and to join their governments. And the diaspora, the so-called Ukrainian diaspora, which was formed after World War II, was formed mostly out of the Banderites and collaborators of the Nazi Germany. That's why this continuation is happening from the West today again. And it never stopped after World War II, continuation with the Cold War. And how do we see it today? In Ukraine especially, it was brought long before special operation started by Russia and Ukraine, the banning of the May 9th, the banning of the Soviet films, the banning of the old Soviet films about World War II, where everybody grew up in those movies. They have nothing against the United States or anybody else there. And yes, and promoting Nazism as something cool and better. And we have people on the ground, and older people even talking how it was even better under Nazi Germany than in the Soviet times, because they saw how much propaganda was pulled into their heads from that TV in Kiev. And this is what the reality is on the ground. The promotion and pushing into the Nazism into countries like Ukraine today, to build anti-Russia, has formed the history that we did not do the job right then. Nazism was not totally destroyed at that time.
Well, Andre, I can tell you there are a lot of people around me that say the job wasn't finished off. It needs to be finished off, okay?
That's what I'm talking about.
That's the anger that so many people have. You know, Vladimir, you know, maybe I'm too sentimental. I was trained as a historian. I mean, this was a tremendous, momentous event. Signing the Nazi signing their surrender, and Eisenhower was very, very assured the Russians that there would be a joint signing because of the contribution that the Soviets had contributed to the war. I mean, this would be a moment for everybody to say, hey, let's step back. Let's not be consumed by Ukraine, by tariffs and all this. This is a moment we can sit down and have a quiet and learning moment here. And the Russians would very much welcome that. But no, you have leaders in the European Union that are being blackmailed and threatened if they come and celebrate in Moscow. I mean, what kind of message does that send about defeating fascism?
The whole history of this, you know, kind of conflict is, you know, worth revisiting. We remember that you mentioned Napoleon invasion. After, you know, Napoleon invasion, both, you know, Napoleon was fought on one side by Russia, on the other side of Great Britain. And right as these two victorious countries emerged, Britain got very, very nervous about Russia. Russia is victorious. It might move in Europe. It might mess up our plans of dominating Europe and Asia and Africa and so on. So Britain became, instead of after being an ally, becomes a rival. The same thing happened after the Second World War. Russia became a rival. United States got unbelievably nervous. They began to organize this NATO organization with Europe, which purpose was, you know, as we know, to keep Russia out and Germany down. And that was, you know, again, attempt of this Anglo-Saxon world, unfortunately. And I'm not, you know, I'm not happy to bring up this concept, but I think it is this, you know, British constantly try to interfere, to separate Russia from Europe and from Germany in particular. And so these two countries, which are basically geographically very close, they could benefit from kind of working together. And they were actually very recently, they began to work together with all these good gas deals. You know, Germany turned into this really sort of, you know, industrial center of Europe. And that's, you know, then Ukraine comes along very, very handily. And again, this NATO, British, and American strategists use this Ukraine as a wedge to separate Russia from Europe. And they continue to do this, and they will continue to milk it. That's, you know, I hope that people in Europe realize that they are being played again against their geographical, historical, cultural, mutual history. There is a wedge to keep Russia out, Germany down, and Anglo-Saxon world in domination.
Yeah, but Jim, that's why we don't have security in Europe, because Russia is not an integral part of it. And that is the solution to Europe's security problems. That is the solution to the Ukraine conflict, is the indivisibility of security for all. And that is something Western powers will not agree to. They will not accept that Russia is a legitimate equal power. That's the problem, Jim.
That is the problem. And as Vladimir points out, the British have always been at the heart of this. I mean, let's not forget the Crimean War episode as well. And unfortunately, the United States has stepped into those shoes. I think early on in the Trump administration, people were hopeful that the United States can finally come around to be friends, or at least have a correct relationship with Russia. And I think that's increasingly unlikely, I'm sad to say. I mean, I think the big fear, and again, I hate to put it this way, in the Anglo-Saxon world, is that there would be a rapprochement between Russia and Germany, and Germany, of course, in that sense, being the core of Western Europe. And that terrifies the people who have this thalassocratic view of the world, that the sea power, the American or British sea power, can dominate the world. And let's remember, Russia geographically is in a much weaker position than it was during the Napoleonic invasion of the Russian Empire or Hitler's invasion of the Soviet Union, in that its western frontiers than they were at that time. That what we saw with the breakup of the Soviet Union was kind of like a super Brest-Litovsk in terms of pushing Russia back from a defensible position. That's why people like Brzezinski says, we need Ukraine, because if we get Ukraine, then Russia is no longer an empire. It's really no longer a defensible state. And that's why we got to this war now.
Yeah, I mean, Andre, I mean, I hear all the, you know, I watch podcasts, I do a lot of reading, you know, and the topic of European security is often mentioned, very academic sometimes. But, you know, what I found really distressing is that, yeah, I think everybody should have security here. Russia, for many, European security will be sustained without Russia. But without that, without security, Greece for security for all, Ukraine ends up being the continuous victim here. And they don't care about Ukraine. They want to inflict a defeat on Russia. They don't care about Ukraine or its people.
Of course, they never cared about Ukraine. They never cared. They used Ukraine in the situation, and the Ukrainian government regime, which sold out throughout the years of 30 years of independence, was selling out step by step after the first Maidan revolution 2004, and then rapidly after 2014, the coup. They were selling out to the west of the United States, because that's where most of their money is, and that's where they wanted to be citizens of. And a lot of government officials in Ukraine are citizens of the United States, and we can see where their sons and daughters are during this war, living in Washington and Miami and et cetera. So this is the process of this war. The collaborators, the government of Ukraine itself doesn't care about its own people. So when Zelensky or his government is negotiating so-called peace, they're negotiating not peace or anything else. They're negotiating for themselves personal gains in this conflict. They don't care also about the people. So the masters of in Europe and the globalists in the United States, they don't care about it. And I can add to the security in Europe, why the Soviet Union did fall apart, because Russia, the Soviet Union, was the first step for security in Europe process of leaving Eastern Germany. The 300,000-400,000 troops that left Eastern Germany were the first step for getting peace and security guarantees for everybody. The United States did not go forward, or NATO did not go forward with that, those security steps and guarantees for Europe. They stayed, and their bases are still today are in Europe. So who is the who's the one who is threatening Europe today? Russia, which left and basically brought down the Berlin Wall, or the United States and the West, who still have their army bases in Europe today?
You know, Vladimir, to finish up here, the parade that will be on Red Square, what Western leaders and pundits, they don't want to see world leaders standing next to Vladimir Putin, because that means that their myth that Russia is isolated is false. Vladimir.
Yeah, that's the message they want to convey. Everybody who challenges our kind of control of hegemony in the unipolar world is a pariah, is a despot, is some kind of autocrat, which is, you know, a simplification of history. And, you know, again, attempt to totally kind of demonize Russia, and not to take it seriously, not to take its concerns seriously. What is interesting, when Europe is worried about themselves, they right away go to Baltic states, to Poland, ask these people about their fears of Russia, and they then act that, oh, yeah, we take it seriously. But do they go to Russia and ask Russian people how they experienced invasions and Western attacks and Western, you know, Western bombing? That should be considered, too. Russian concerns should be taken seriously. But, you know, to take it seriously requires real overhaul of the whole kind of geopolitical approach to history. And we're not seeing Western leaders as being ready for that. You know, it used to be...
On that very positive note, because we very rarely end this program on a positive note, I want to wish all of you a Victory Day 80 years on over the destruction of fascism in Europe. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I want to thank my guests in Providence, Basel, and in Virginia. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.